Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome inside the Radio Laurier studios here on the Waterloo campus of Wilfrid Laurier University. My name is Ian Bailey. I'm the sports manager here for the radio station, and it is time for the first edition of Golden Bullets since Reading Week. So we missed last week's edition. There's a lot of stuff to happen over the past week of sports, so we've got a full show clocked in for you today. So I thank you for joining if you're one of our numerous regular listeners, or if you're just listening to the music, you're just kind of, and my voice popped up, hopefully you'll stay, as it's an entertaining show. It is an hour. We have two callers lined up too, and I made sure these are the two callers who called in the last episode two Fridays ago as Four Nations face off for the NHL was just kicking off. I'll have them on again this week to test how well, you know, our predictions carried out, and to give a public apology to Jordan Binnington. But that's later on in the show. We start off each show, of course, talking about Wilfrid Laurier University sports. So this is your taste of campus sports for the week here on Gold Bold. Again, glad you could join us. Laurier women's ice hockey is the talk of the town, talk of the week, and it will be the talk tonight as they face off against the University Ave rivals, the U Waterloo Warriors, in a best of three game series in the OUA women's hockey quarterfinals. They played the first game already. That was Wednesday night at the Columbia Ice Fields on the U-Waterloo campus. And Laurier, after entering the third period with a 2-0 lead, they dropped the game 3-2 in the first 3 minutes of overtime. Heartbreaking loss and a frustrating loss. It was a preventable comeback win for the Waterloo Warriors, and it was a preventable overtime winner off the stick of the Warriors. Golden Hawks enter third period up 2-0 off the stick of Elle Jackson, and Jersey Lindley getting her first playoff goal. And if you listen to the broadcast, the commentary, I've been a Jersey Lindley advocate for the past couple years, so I'm glad to see her get one, pot one. Hopefully they use them more often. I've been a big fan of Lindley. It's good to see her get one. And Elle Jackson gets one, too. They enter third period comfortably, 2-0. And then Warriors break the dam, get two. One at the start of the period, one at the end of the period to tie the game into overtime. And they win it off an incredible defensive lapse of the Laurier Golden Hawks. And it shades of McDavid's winner in the Four Nations Cup. From Marner at the corner, unprotected in the slot, alone with the goaltender, and seals the deal. It was somewhat like that for the Warriors two nights ago at home. It was a defensive lapse where their player was just left completely open in the slot. One-on-one with Sarah Howell, the Laurier goaltender, and they receive the puck from the corner, and they make no mistake and bury it in overtime. Now, that defensive lapse where just no one covered the front of the net, you know, the most prime scoring opportunity location on the ice, just no one there. That's not a good look. And I would just blame the defenders on that one. However, and I'll make sure to bring this up tonight on the broadcast for tonight's game, because it is rather disappointing to see, and it a bit angers me. Clara Chisholm for the Golden Hawks, great player. Nothing against her as a person. I talked to her on the bus one time, heading down to Woodstock. Great person, too. However, she drops her stick in the defensive zone, and instead of picking it back up, she elects to go to the bench for a change. Now, I understand, you know, not wanting to play without a stick, but you're in the defensive zone, you're battling for the puck, and you lose your stick. Stick wasn't broken. There wasn't the weird camera angle at the Waterloo ice rink. You couldn't see where the stick ended up. However, the stick, it was not enough force on the stick check as they're battling for the puck to break the stick. So the stick was just laying there, dropped. So instead of A, picking up the stick, which is what everyone should do, B, if you're not going to pick up the stick, if you think you're out of position to pick up the stick, or maybe it's splintered a bit, I don't know. But if you're not going to pick up the stick, then you're going to collapse to the front of the net, pick up a man, and you're going to have to play without a stick. People do that. It's expected that you're going to have to play without a stick at some point. Every Hawk player has played without a stick in the defensive zone. Chisholm elects to go to the bench for a change. And this is overtime. This is the far change. You're the far bench when you're in the defensive zone. So you're taking yourself out of the play for about 8 seconds while you go to the bench and replacement player comes back on and gets himself into the play. That's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds you're playing shorthanded 5-on-4 because one of your players are exchanging themselves. By the time her replacement player, Haley Simonowski, gets on, Waterloo's celebrating the game-winning goal. So Chisholm drops her stick, doesn't pick it up, which is your first act, you know, your first action. Your second action is just play without the stick and collapse defensively and get back in front of the net and start boxing out players, start pressuring them. You don't have a stick, but you still have a body. We've seen the time and time again, every level of hockey, you play without a stick sometimes in the defensive zone. That's your second action. The third action, the one she elected to choose, was to go off for a change, making her team shorthanded for 10 seconds. In the defensive zone with Waterloo has momentum and has possession. This was not communicated, obviously, with the defenders on the ice. As defenders on the ice, you could tell they're all focused on the puck. They're not looking back to their bench. They don't see Chisholm changing. So they expect there to be five players on their side on the ice at that time. So they all have their man, which means one Warriors player is open. That was the player that was in the slot. That was the player that scored. So initially, what looked like a defensive lapse of not picking up that player was really Laurie being shorthanded without realizing it. So I can't really fault the defenders there. I am faulting Claire Chisholm on that play. But they'll have time for redemption tonight. As that was just a, I want to get that done and over with at the start of the show because that was just a heartbreaker to watch. But they have redemption tonight. It's a best of three. Very small series, which means this is a must win. They dropped the first game. They need to win this one, and they need to win the next to advance. Warriors win tonight. Golden Hawks season is over. So Golden Hawks need to win tonight. It's at home. It's at 7 p.m. It's at Rim Park. Usually they play at Rec Complex. Here it's at the Rim Park, largest sportsplex in Waterloo region. And oh, apparently, before I got into the studio today, I was checking up with the Laurier Athletics, and over 50% of the tickets have been sold. So get your tickets while you can, because that's a great number for women's ice hockey here at Laurier. And it's against UWaterloo. So if you have Waterloo friends, UWaterloo roommates, invite them down, cheer on their team. You go down to cheer on your team. More fans in the stands. It's always great to see. It's more energy going towards the ladies. And it's good hockey, too. I know I just spent the last 10 minutes saying how bad of a play Laurier made, but they're up 2-0. They know how to put the puck in the back of the net. So do the Warriors. I'm expecting a very close game. I'm expecting probably you'll see another 3-2. I might say 4-3. I don't see a team getting a multi-goal lead all game. I see a very tightly contested game. And women's ice hockey at the OUA level, there's always a lot of chances. There's always a lot of shots. It's very high action hockey, very high action brand of hockey. So I do encourage everyone listening to either check it out in person or check it out tonight, 7 p.m. OUA TV and Radio Laurier. And it'll be me and Dan Polischik from the athletics department on the call tonight. So make sure you watch out for that. Other news around Laurier sports, just Laurier men's hockey. I'm wondering why I'm not talking about them. It's because they're not doing anything right now. They did not make the playoffs after a startlingly, after a bad season. it wasn't good. And if you end the season at the bottom of the standings, doesn't really mean it's a bad season if you're expected to do that, as long as you grow and you develop. But Laurier wasn't expected to wind up at the bottom of the standings. Laurier was a playoff team last year. And to be last in your conference, the Western Division of OUA men's hockey, and second last overall, only 4 wins in 28 games. That is a disappointing season for Laurier men's program. And they had, you know, some graduating players of last season. They're putting on the purple and gold. Sam Rhodes, Patrick Brown, two of the stars of the team. They're graduating. They moved on. And we'll have to see how the program responds next year. Women's basketball, overrating week. They made the playoffs. They squeaked in there. Of course, basketball does have a wider, OUA basketball has a wider playoff system. I think the 12 teams making it into the playoffs. It, women's basketball squeaked in around the 10, 11, 12th seed. But they lost during a reading week, so we couldn't cover it. No one was here. But women's basketball lost in a reading week down Highway 7 against the Guelph Griffins. Of course, that was a road game. And they were up at the half. But the story of the Golden Hawks, both programs, but especially the women's basketball team this season, has been inability to maintain leads in the third and fourth quarter. That's been a storyline that everyone's mentioned and commented on throughout the sports team's coverage of the season, and that's what ends up biting them in the playoffs, the inability to hang on to a lead. Leading by several points going into the half, wasn't like one or two points. It was a healthy margin. And then losing by a similar healthy margin in the third and fourth quarters. Men's basketball didn't make the playoffs. They barely missed the, I think they ended up 13th or 14th, so barely missed the playoff line. And they're looking to bounce back against some notable graduations on both those teams. Tay Dolan for the men's, people like Jana Engie and Cassidy Hurdle for the women's. They're all moving on. So we'll have to see. It'll be interesting to see how these teams develop over the next year and see, are they back to where they were? Do they go down? Do they go up after these notable graduations? Each team having notable graduations. Sometimes it's a quieter senior year than the others. This year is a big seniors year for most teams. Again, Laurier men's hockey, people like Sam Rhodes, Patrick Brown, women's basketball, Cassidy Hurdle, men's basketball, Tay Donald, who's been the star, OUA All-Star, the star of this men's basketball team. Laurier women's hockey, too. Ariel McDonald, of note, moving on, too. The blue line stalwart for the team for the last couple years. But that's it for the sports, or the sport, you know, teams on the ice and on the court. But the curling teams for Golden Hawks, doing pretty well. They're over in Lethbridge, Alberta. And they're undefeated. The women's team is undefeated through round robin. The Laurier Golden Hawks, they finished the round robin 7-0. They advance right to the semis. And they'll take on, from out of Halifax, Dalhousie. 7-0 round robin in the national championships for Laurier's Golden Hawks. Laurier's Golden Hawk curlers. And men's curling was almost undefeated. But they did end up losing finally. But they're still set for semis action. That's against UNB, University of New Brunswick. So both curling teams doing very well, as well as the track teams are in action too. We have curling going on. We have track going on. We have curling going on again. I just like curling. I had to say it twice. We have swimming going on too. So lots of action for Laurier Athletics for coverage, for commentary. We mostly deal with hockey and basketball, and those seasons are done or coming to an end. Hopefully not. Hopefully Laurier women's make it far. But curling, track, and swimming don't always get the same attention. But they're doing very well, of course. And the two athletes of the week for Laurier also coming from the track teams. Abby Byers from the track, as well as Nolan Kuhlberg. Of course, Nolan Kuhlberg broke the program record in the 600 meters this past week. And he was also the anchor on the 4x400 relay team for the Golden Hawks, which also set a program record. So great year in terms of, you know, setting the bar higher for Golden Hawks from Nolan Kuhlberg and the rest of the indoor track team. Other Laurier Athletics headlines. That's about it. I'm just scrolling through the headlines here. And that's about it. Curling team's doing well. Keep up with them. Track team doing well. Keep up with them. And the swimming team is doing pretty well. Keep up with them. Now, moving on. I don't know if you guys watched or not. I don't know if you guys heard about it. It wasn't like it was all over the news. Four Nations, Canada versus USA. I'm getting giddy just talking about it. That's not the soundboard I wanted. That's what I wanted. Big round of applause for Team Canada here at the Four Nations Cup. What a tournament. What a game. What a win. And what a moment. There was skepticism about the Four Nations Cup. It replaced the All-Star game. Replaced the All-Star weekend, which has declined in popularity, declined in quality, and not even the players really care about anymore. The All-Star Games 20 years ago were good. I like the conference versus conference idea. You pick the best players from the East, pick the best players from the West, and have them go at it. And the players cared. But since they kind of they changed the format, I want to say maybe eight years ago, where instead of just conference versus conference, it's now division versus division versus division versus division on 3-on-3. So it's just a show match with nothing, you know, it's 3-on-3. It's not real hockey. You know, it's not 5-on-5 like an actual game. It's a gimmick. And I like 3-on-3 overtime. Whole game at 3-on-3. Players won't care. Fans don't really care. The skills competition they had was also very, very gimmicky. I always like seeing the accuracy shooting. That's about it. The rest of the skills competition, you could tell no one put a lot of effort in. So Four Nations coming in, thought it was going to be, I was replacing the All-Star weekend, but it's probably just kind of the same effort as All-Star weekend. Everyone kind of dismissed it before it even started. And then the first game happened, and it was Canada versus Sweden, and it blew everyone's socks off, mine included. I haven't found them yet. Overtime thriller off the stick of Mitch Marner. Crosby turned back the clock. Crosby was great all tournament. You forget how good Crosby is because he's stuck on the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is wild to say. Stuck on the Pittsburgh Penguins? That's a great franchise history of success. They were good for a lot of years. Crosby wasn't stuck on the Pittsburgh Penguins. He got to play for Pittsburgh. He was with Malkin and the Tang. And think about the 2016-2017 teams. Kessel and Kunitz, Fleury, Murray. Great, great teams. Hornquist, Hagelin, Bonino. Great teams. Good rosters. Good playoff rosters. They won two cups in a row less than 10 years ago. Now the Penguins, Kyle Dubas is just, and it's not really Dubas' fault, the general manager, but they're stuck in a lot of poor contracts. They have a rapidly aging roster. They have an old roster as is. They're only getting older. Their drafting and development has been subpar. And so I think it's fair to say Crosby has been stuck on the Penguins. And the Penguins are in no position to make the playoffs this year. Maybe they might squeak into a wild card should they go on a 10-game winning streak. But they're no position to challenge for a cup. And you forget how good Crosby is because everyone kind of dismisses the Penguins. And he gets the national or international stage, and he puts on a clinic when he's 37 years old. So shout out to Sidney Crosby. I know he's listening. And then we get to Canada versus USA. On that Saturday night, the last Golden Boat episode was the Friday. They played the Saturday. So we previewed it then, gave some predictions. We had two callers on. One said USA is a stronger team. One said Canada was the stronger team. For Saturday night, the Americans won. 3-1, including an empty net. And that was an amazing start to the game. Of course, that was the three fights within the first 10 seconds of the game. It was absolutely surreal to watch. It was wild. It was so much fun as a fan just watching it, just throwing it on, just kind of having it, you know, okay, we'll sit on the couch, watch the game. And then suddenly there's fighting. You never fight at the international level because the IIHF has a mandatory suspension for fighting. But this is written by the NHL, not the IIHF. The NHL says, yeah, you can fight. And so they did. And they fought hard. And Cannon went 2-1 in those fights, but they end up losing 3-1 in the game. And the States showed that they can hang with Canada internationally. And they can beat Canada internationally. Canada goes on, they beat Finland. States go on, they actually end up losing to Sweden, but that doesn't matter. Because Canada and the U.S. as the top two teams out of the four nations competing. Canada and the U.S. face off again on that Thursday night. Last week, 8 days ago. Canada wins it in overtime. McJesus himself clinches international glory. And what a show it was. Sorry, I heard squeaking outside the door, and I get weird. What a show it was. Off McDavid from the pass of Marner and pass of McCarr, too. And there's a whole, I think it was Kevin Bieksa on Sportsnet went over it. It was such a good in-depth explanation. Mitch Marner and Cale Makar making eye contact, Makar ringing around to him, Marner taking the puck off his stick, angling it perfectly to his stick, which is a much harder play than it looks like. And then crisp pass tape to McDavid, an inch away from Austin Matthews, the American stick. Perfect pass. It's going to haunt him. McDavid clinches it against Connor Hellebuyck. But almost as important, arguably as important, as putting the puck in the net during overtime is keeping the puck out of your net in overtime. That's where Jordan Binnington comes in. And Binnington, very controversial choice for starter, very controversial choice to be named the starter of this Canadian team, as there are simply, arguably, not anymore. Now we all think Binnington's the best goalie in the world. But beforehand, you could name a fair few amount of Canadian goaltenders better than Binnington in the past couple years. Logan Thompson is having one of the best seasons of goaltenders in the league and the best Canadian season of a goaltender in the league. Not named. Not even on the team. Mackenzie Blackwood, arguably one of the better Canadian goaltenders there, not named to the team. Dayton Hill is a fine goaltender. Jordan Binnington, who since the Blues Cup run, hasn't really, is very streaky, very inconsistent, and lets in some gaffes at times. And Sam Montembeau. Lots of controversy around the Binnington pick. He proves everyone wrong, including me and including our next caller, who, on the last episode, we both agreed that Binnington was not a particularly good choice. However, he proved us all wrong. It's time for a public apology to Jordan Binnington. New segment on Golden Bold. Public apology. As we will get our first caller geared up. As I didn't set it up beforehand because I am an organized person. And we will start the call. We'll get him in here. As our incoming caller, Jack Duma. We'll see if he picks up here.
Hello.
Yeah, well, there he is. All right. See, first time. First time's the charm. This is a Jack Duma. We had him on 2 weeks ago where he said the United States had the better roster, especially in the crease. We both agree that Jordan Binnington was a questionable choice and, more importantly, not the right choice for Canada. Jack, what do you say to that after the result of the final game against the States?
I know Jordan Binnington is listening right now.
He is.
I'd like to publicly apologize to him and his family for ever doubting his abilities. He may have been pretty average for the entire Four Nations, but when it mattered at TD Garden, he got the job done.
He carried
that team.
He owns TD Garden. He owns TD Garden, of course. That same place where he won his Stanley Cup as a member of the Blues in 2019. He comes out on top at the Four Nations face-off in that same building in 2025. You mentioned he was average throughout the tournament, and he was. There's about a goal a game against the States, against Sweden, and that you would have wanted him to have, that were fairly weak goals. As a goaltender yourself, you're going to overtime against a high-profile team, a high-scoring team like the States. What's your mindset like? Can you speak to the mindset at all that Binnington had to have going into the overtime?
It's just full confidence. You can't even think of the possibility of letting a goal in, because you lose the entire tournament and your whole country down. You just gotta, don't care about anything. Just save the pucks, and that's exactly what he did. And he carried Canada.
He did. It was as much as McDavid, McJesus himself gets the credit. Binnington, like, those were like three incredible scoring opportunities. He shut down. Minute later, Canada wins it. Binnington, again, we talked about Logan Thompson not being on the team. We talked about Mackenzie Blackwood not being on the team. Then you had maybe a veteran like Fleury not being on the team, proving us all wrong that he should have been on the team all along. Outside of the crease, Canada's forwards in defense, what do you make of the skaters during the tournaments? And with the Olympics next year, do you think there's any omissions that could make the Olympics next year, or do you think this roster is what we'll see in 2026?
Yeah, I think it will mostly be the same. I could see some like younger talent getting added, since Olympics are in 2 or 3 years. So that's a lot more time to develop a lot of players. And we could see a lot of the older guys like Crosby and Doughty maybe not be in the roster if they retire. It'll depend on how they're feeling in that time. But I do think the roster will mostly be the same.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against the roster who won you the Four Nations. But you mentioned, yeah, Doughty, I'm not sure if he'll make it. He's getting older. He looked good in the tournament. But
yeah,
he's getting older, and you lose a step, especially when the Olympics come around. Crosby, you've got to have him on the roster, don't you?
If he's still playing, absolutely.
He retires then next year. I guess he won't play.
Well, when's the tournament? Like 2 years?
2026, just next year.
Oh, okay. That's just pretty close. Okay, never mind. Crosby will be there.
Yeah, but Doughty, I don't know if he'll be there. With this win, Binnington, I won't say, you know, I don't know, but will very, very likely be the starter in the Olympics now. Which,
there's a real possibility.
Which many Canadians wouldn't want before the tournament. Now, they're very content with Jordan Binnington being the starter. He has redeemed himself in such a legendary way among hockey fans. Where it comes to backing Jordan Binnington up, in this tournament, we had Aiden Hill and Sam Montembeau. You'd imagine that change for the Olympics, right? None of them got any action during the Four Nations, but with the backlash against their goaltending picks and the fact that there were just better goaltending picks, do you expect Canada to make the change and put other backup goaltenders backing Jordan Binnington next year in the Olympics? Or do you think they'll just maintain the status quo and throw him back, throw a Hill and Montembeau back in Canada uniform again?
Yeah, I really thought Aiden Hill was going to be the starter, but Cooper, the coach, decided to go with Binnington. But I can see Humph Kumpfer, I believe is his name. I can see him being a backup. Even starting. I think it'll depend how Binnington's doing the rest of the season until the Olympics, see if he keeps on his current form. But yeah.
Yeah.
Binnington Kumpfer, I see.
Yeah, I see Binnington Kumpfer is a good shout. I thought Aiden Hill, that's a good point. I thought Aiden Hill was getting the start too. He won the cup in 2023 with Vegas. And he looked good in that playoff run. And so I would have thought he would have got the start. He's been better more recently. They go with Binnington, who, again, since that cup run with the St. Louis Blues, very streaky, very inconsistent, and not the best Canadian goaltender. But they go with him. And I think even if he has a bad season, even if he drops 10 in a row, John Cooper named Binnington the starter ahead of the tournament. I don't see him, you know, I still see Binnington being the starter. Binnington cannot play another game until the Olympics next year. I still see Binnington the starter. I don't necessarily agree with that, but the way Hockey Canada management is structured, I think Binnington has secured his spot as the starter. The question is the backup. I see Kemper being the backup, the third goaltender. Do you go with Aiden Hill, or do you go with someone, Logan Thompson, Mackenzie Blackwood, or another name?
I say go with Hill. He's got a cup. He earned it.
Yeah, I go with Hill too. Sam Montembeau, I think, was a weird choice for the third goaltender. I don't see him making the third goaltender again next year. I think Aiden Hill is good. Notable omissions on this Canadian team. That's, mind you, won the tournament. So, like, way to go management for constructing the team. But probably the most notable omission being Mark Scheifele missing from this Four Nations team. Do you see him making the Olympics team? Or do you think the team's just too crowded for him?
I forgot he existed. He definitely should be on the team. He's a very good player.
He is. He's, like, the best player on, like, one of the league's best teams in the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah. Didn't make the team. I think he should be on. Of course, the big talking point was who would come out of the lineup. And some might say Cirelli, but Cirelli looked really good, especially under John Cooper, because that's his NHL coach. So do you take out Cirelli, really good defensive faceoff man? I don't know if you take Cirelli off from, but who would you take off for Scheifele is the question. Do you take Seth Jarvis? Jarvis is pretty good. Do you take out Braden Point? No. Do you take out Hagel? I think he's earned a spot doing the fight in the first game against the States. I don't want to take him out. He's a great energy guy. So I want Scheifele on the team. I just don't see who you'd take out on the defensive side for Canada. You mentioned Drew Doughty might come out of the lineup. Do you see anyone else coming out of the lineup, or do you think that defensive core is pretty solid?
Well, I think they did mostly a very good job at defense, besides that overtime, of course. But they really gave Binghamton mostly an easy time for all the Sweden and Finland games. So I don't imagine it changing that much. Hopefully Petrangelo gets better.
Petrangelo missed. Shea Theodore got injured too. So I think those two are healthy. Think of a Canadian defensive roster. You have Makar and Taze as a top line. You have Pietrangelo and Theodore. I don't know why. Jose Theodore. Shea Theodore. Shea Theodore on the second line. Then you have Morrissey and Thomas Harley. He's had a good showing in the tournament.
Yeah.
You have Morrissey. If you want to put Doughty back in as a veteran place, you could. You could do Morrissey and really like anyone else. And that's a really good, really strong defensive pair. Moving on to the States, Connor Hellebuyck definitely is arguably the best goaltender currently. Probably a very likely Vezina candidate, very likely Vezina winner. You don't shy away from Hellebuyck. Ottinger is great. He's probably Hellebuck's backup for the States in the Olympics. Jeremy Swayman? Do you keep him as that third goaltender, or do you look to someone else?
I mean, Swayman's had a pretty bad year in Boston.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I'm not too familiar on American goaltenders.
I'll list out some names for you, because I wasn't either, so I just Googled it. The options, you have John Gibson, Thatcher Demko, Jonathan Quick, who is old, so probably not. But you could replace Swayman with John Gibson, Thatcher Demko, Charlie Lindgren, Joseph Woll, Dustin Wolf, or Tim Thomas showed up for me too.
Oh, well, if Tim is good, then definitely give him the top three, but I'd probably go Demko, assuming he's not injured, likely.
Yeah, Demko's definitely bit my injury bug. I would go Demko. I think Demko, when Demko's on, he is one of the top goaltenders in the league. So if he's not injured and also on his game, the States have the best goaltending tandem in Ottinger, Hellebuyck, and Demko.
Yeah, it's not close.
It's not close. While Canada's good, and Binnington's regained his legendary status, you'd have Binnington, Logan Thompson, and Aiden Hill. Well, all good goaltenders are not Ottinger, Hellebuyck, or Demko.
Yeah, I think those three goalies, I just call them the best three in the NHL, probably.
That's, if they're all playing at their best, that's, I'd agree with that almost. At their best, at their peak, I don't think you can do better than that.
like maybe Shesterkin, but he's had a pretty average year.
Yeah, I'd say Shesterkin at his peak was like was again he won the Vezina a couple years ago, but since that Vezina win, Shesterkin has just not been the player he was. Vasilevsky has had a bit of a career comeback the past two seasons. He's not been performing as well as he had. He was the prime shutdown goaltender 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22. Arguably should have won the Conn Smythe on both the Lightning Cup wins early in the 2020s. A couple seasons after that, he hasn't been that good. But this season, he's been back to really good. The question is, do we see Russia at the Olympics next year? That'd be Shesterkin. That'd be Vasilevsky. That'd be Sorokin. That could be Bobrovsky. In those net, that's also a really strong goaltending tandem. I know this isn't a political show, and we are not, you know, diplomatic experts. However, Russia at the Olympics next year, would you like to see the Russian athletes at the Olympics?
Absolutely, I would. They deserve a shot. I just Googled it, and it looks like they're currently in limbo. Whatever that means for the Olympics.
It means that no one has no clue. That's a good update, though. They're in limbo, which, like, it's hard. Like, four nations, they bring the best on best, but you don't have the best because Ovechkin isn't there, Kucherov isn't there, Vasilevsky isn't there. The whole Russian roster, Russia, very strong hockey team, not there. So it's just false marketing to advertise as best on best, but that's what they did. The Olympics, again, politics aside, I would like to see Russia there because those are some of the best hockey players, and the Olympics should be the place for the best hockey players. But with that, our time's running up here. However, I'll ask you one more question. It is the NHL trade deadline approaching. Your team is the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mentioned them earlier when talking about Crosby. I'll mention them again. What would you like to see the Penguins do? What would you like to see Kyle Dubas do come this trade deadline?
A sell. I want Carlson gone.
I sell that. So you're committing to the sell.
Yes, yeah, so you can't half commit. You got to full commit to the sell.
And this is a Penguins team that has not committed to the sell. They've been trying to delay the sell over and over again while they still have Malkin, Letang, Crosby. Maybe not, you know, this season. But do you see any one of those three finally not being a Penguin? Do you see one of those three moving away from Pittsburgh before the end of their career?
Unlikely. No, I think they're all going to stay and die with the team.
I think that's a valid prediction. And with that, we will say goodbye to Jack Duma. Jack, any last words?
Thank you, Bennington.
And that was Jack Duma kicking off the inaugural segments of Golden Bold called Public Apology. And we will have our second caller on now once I get this loaded up. And this was the second caller we had. Ooh, that was loud. This is the second caller we had 2 weeks ago. Jack predicted the American win. This guy predicted the Canada win. This guy turned out to be the right one. This is Jackson Lee, host of CKLU's Swing to Drive Home with Jackson Lee. And now he is here at Golden Bold. This is Jackson. We'll talk about Four Nations at the start. We'll move into Blue Jays talk, too, because there's movements around Blue Jays and Vladimir Guerrero drama and all that fun stuff. We'll talk about the Four Nations Cup first. Canada wins it. I'll just get your general impressions of how that tournament went, how great it was for hockey and fans alike. And I'll give you an opportunity to apologize to Jordan Binnington.
Well, I was going to say thank you for that. I think I feel like I'm almost obligated even to start out by, you know, giving my input to the public apology segment of Golden Bold Radio. So Jordan Binnington, I know you are listening. And I got to apologize. I mean, he swept me away. I did not see that coming. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I mean, in hindsight, in 2020, of course, I probably should have, seeing as, you know, we know what Binnington's capable of in those Game 7, in those championship game situations. But it just felt so out of nowhere watching him against Sweden, even watching him against Finland. It just did not look like a championship winning goaltender, especially in that game against the United States, that first one. But then that last overtime comes and he's just save after save after save. There's at least five or six different opportunities where just like a millisecond slower on Bennington's part and the game's over. United States takes it. But no, and we're here right now. I think that the whole tournament just as a whole is a phenomenal thing. I think they can never go back to that embarrassment that is the All-Star Game skills competition. You were saying earlier, the accuracy shooting is pretty much the only enjoyable part of that. I always like the hardest slap shot in Charlie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you grow up and you just, like, you've seen it before 10, 15, 20 times. It just, it gets old. And this is fresh. This is new, or newer, I suppose. And I like that a lot. One thing I do want to comment on is you guys were talking about potential Olympic rosters or maybe some snubs from Team Canada.
Yes.
And seeing as how you are a Calgary fan, I find it baffling that you did not mention Mackenzie Weegar for that Team Canada roster, especially over a guy like Drew Doughty or Thomas Harley. Now, I like those two, but Weegar right now, if anyone out there is familiar with how the Western Conference is shaping up at the moment, Calgary is, by all standards, not a phenomenal team. But one phenomenal part of that team that I would argue is their centerpiece is defenseman Mackenzie Weegar. Now, I was completely baffled when he was left off the roster, but to do that again for the Olympics, I feel would be a foolish misuse of Canadian assets.
I was baffled when he was left off the roster too. However, I will say I like Weegar. I think as a seventh defender, he might make it, but I just can't justify putting Mackenzie Weegar. Like, where'd you put him over? First line, Taze McCarr. Can't mess that up. Second line, probably Theodore and Pietrangelo. They're teammates together on Vegas, two of the best Canadian defensemen. You can't mess that up, which leaves only the third line. You have to have Morrissey out there. And then what do you do? I liked Harley showing at the tournament. I wouldn't put him over Weegar at the start of the tournament. I liked his tournament. You could put Harley there with Morrissey on the third line, or you could put Parayko. I liked his tournament a lot. You could put him on the third line. Sanheim, probably not making the Olympic team. I didn't particularly think he was a standout at the tournament. But for Morrissey, Morrissey's partner on the third line, it could be Weegar, but it could also be Parayko.
Yeah, I definitely like Parayko on that third pairing. I think Morrissey, if it wasn't for, you know, like you said, the Colorado duo and the Vegas duo, I feel like Morrissey could easily slot into, well, literally anywhere, I suppose, on that team, even if you wanted to give him a, even like a limited third line forward role, even. I know it sounds unorthodox, but he is that kind of skater. He can put up great offenses we're seeing right now. So really, you could put a guy like that anywhere. But I feel like Alex Pietrangelo, and this might be a bit of a hot take.
All right, here we go.
I do not like Alex Pietrangelo's play. I mean, and I can't even say about his play at the Four Nations because he didn't. And that concerns me. I don't know if we get to the Olympics, or at least I believe he didn't. He might have played one of those games.
No, he checked out due to injury.
Yes. So I don't know. I feel as though you get a guy like Weegar who is truly a, I don't want to call him an enforcer because he's just so good at everything, but he isn't afraid to throw his weight around and he's just insanely good on the back check. And I just feel like you got to find a way to put him in there somehow. If that means getting rid of Pietrangelo or Theodore, and I feel like that's just something they have to do. Just of course, not at the expense of the Makar, Taze, Morrissey, whoever, you know.
Now, if Team Canada was really bold, and if I was in charge of Team Canada, I would heavily consider. Now, this is perhaps some bias because I've liked this player for a while, but I think a very, very dark horse, if you want perhaps the best defensive defenseman in the league, you might put Chris Tanev on the roster. Now, given that long introduction, don't mistake me breaking out in laughter for I legitimately think Chris Tanev is the best defensive defenseman in the league. He was great on the Flames. He was great on the Canucks. He's great on the Stars. And he's great on the Leafs now. I think if you want to make a really bold move and, you know, irk a lot of people, Chris Tanev as like a seventh defenseman might be the move.
You know, I could absolutely see that. That is a very good pull. You're right. I feel like Tanev is definitely one of the most underrated players in the league solely because he is just a pure defensive monster who, you know, there's other parts to his game. He'll get the occasional assist here and there, but really his job is just blocking everything, hitting people, making sure the puck doesn't get to the net. And I feel like Canada, especially with this goaltending situation that still may be up in the air, I know you guys are very satisfied with Binnington for the Olympics. I'm not quite sure. But if we get a guy like Tanev on that team who will prevent the puck from even getting to the net in, you know, most of his situations when he's on the ice, I feel like that could be a very good asset to the team. Now, again, putting him over Parayko or Pietrangelo or Harley or whoever,
that's the thing,
a bit of an issue. But as an injury fill-in, as a seventh, maybe even eighth defenseman for that team, I could absolutely see them going ahead with something like that.
Switching gears to the Blue Jays now. You want to talk about Blue Jays? I kind of want to talk about the Blue Jays. Spring training has started down in Dunedin. And give us an overview of the start of spring training. Give us an overview of the Vladimir Guerrero saga, Jackson.
Well, it's... Well, what do we got? We got about 10 minutes until...
We do have 10 minutes, like, so you got that.
You need like a whole hour to go over it. But in short... of course, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is this team's homegrown franchise star. Like, we talk about guys like the Olerudes. We talk about guys like the Roy Halladays, even though he's a pitcher. Like, Guerrero is of that quality, if not better. He is probably the best thing that has happened to this franchise since Roy Halladay, and I'm very comfortable saying that. Of course, you know, you look at guys like Bautista and Dalton and Encarnacion, even, who were phenomenal players in their own right, but really only played for the team for about, you know, 4 or 5 years in their peak, guys like Donaldson, even Letts. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward with that, of course, being your franchise guy. One thing a lot of people, myself included, find frustrating is the money situation. I feel like everyone involved really it feels frustrated with this situation. But essentially boils down to the dollar mark that Guerrero wants versus the dollar mark that Rogers or, you know, Shapiro and Atkins feel Guerrero is worth. Now, we don't know this number. It could very well be in the $400 millions. It could be in the $500 millions. It could even be in the $600 millions. We really don't know. The only thing that we do know is that Guerrero and his agent and the Blue Jays organization are hundreds of millions of dollars off from where they need to be. Not even close is the words that were thrown around much during the offseason. And as a fan of this team and someone who is very dedicated to watching this team, it's frustrating because if you remember, it's very, very short time ago, not only was Shohei Ohtani, another very prolific star, out-of-town star, was offered about $600-700 million by this team. Juan Soto this offseason was offered apparently $500-600 million by this team. You could argue that guys like Soto and Ohtani, of course, are more consistent in their value, but not offering a homegrown star who has said on multiple occasions that he wants to retire as a Blue Jay, not offering him that contract, to me, just feels like either the money number is just out of this world high or Shapiro and Atkins need to grow some kind of backbone.
Yeah, it's just a surprising development. As you see, the Jays were willing to shell out what the equivalent of what Guerrero was worth. They're willing to shell out that money for Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani. We were a plane ride away from getting Ohtani. Now, that same money, you know, is they've shown that they're able to make that deal, make that monetary offer, and they're just, we don't know the specifics, but it just appears that they're not willing to make that same offer to Guerrero, one who's been on your team, one who's developed with you, one who's the face of the franchise. Guerrero heading into this season without an extension. He's on a one-year deal to last the rest of the season. Does Guerrero stay? Does Guerrero go?
Well, I think the Blue Jays are in a very, very tough predicament. There are several scenarios that we could see going forward, and I feel like Guerrero Jr. stays in very few, if any, of them. I think if we see Guerrero go out and have another career year, you know, put up, not even career year, but just, you know, top 10 hitting season in the league, which he's shown he's very capable of doing, you know, like 950, 980 OPS, good strikeout to walk ratio, you know, just solid baseball with above average or even average defensive play over at first base. I really don't see any scenario where that happens and Guerrero stays, because there are going to be teams out there like the Red Sox, like the Dodgers. I know Guerrero has said he doesn't want to play for the Yankees, but money changes a lot of feelings like that. We've seen that before with hundreds of Major League Baseball players. I do not see Guerrero having a good year and staying with the Blue Jays because somebody is going to offer him what he feels he deserves. And unless Shapiro and Atkins match that or probably even have to beat those numbers, whatever they end up being, I just don't see Guerrero staying. Now, if Guerrero plays poorly or the Blue Jays somehow figure themselves out and become a playoff team, even a wild card team, a good wild card team, then we could have a conversation of being, you know, the front office being willing to shell out those kind of dollars to Guerrero, or maybe having to shell out less because of Guerrero's bad production in a season. Again, this is all speculation. It's hard to say what will happen, and we will not know how, you know, what will happen until November, December, whenever these, you know, free agent signings begin. But one thing to be certain is that the entire league is going to be watching Guerrero.
Well said. If you expect if Guerrero goes, then Bichette also may go. And those two players, right, your two best players, they leave. And then suddenly you find yourself in a rebuilding process again for the Jays. Would you not?
No, absolutely. And I feel like that's the one thing that this front office is really trying to avoid. It feels like, you know, after 2016, this franchise was in a massive rebuild for 4 or 5 years. And for some franchises, of course, that is nothing. You look at, you know, the Habs or something. But it's frustrating as a fan of this team again, because also another thing that I probably should mention is that if you're in this front office, the last thing that you can do is let Guerrero or Bichette, for that matter, walk for nothing. So I really feel like if we get to the trade deadline and the team is anything but just completely locked into the playoffs, we're going to see a trade of some kind. I really feel like that is the case because, again, you cannot let a superstar guy like Guerrero walk for absolutely nothing. That would cost Shapiro or Atkins or both of them their jobs on the spot.
Arguably, their actions and the lack of Blue Jays success should have costed them their jobs a handful of seasons ago. Yet they're still at the helm in the final couple minutes of this program. I'll ask you one more question. You mentioned the potential for a trade at the deadline for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Should that occur, what returns, what positions, what would you like to see the Blue Jays build on?
Well, that's a tricky one with baseball. You know, I mean, if you look at similar types of trades around various leagues, like especially we just saw Mikko Rantanen get traded from Colorado over to Carolina for another very, very strong player in Martin Natchez, some young guys, some picks. You can't do that in baseball. You can't trade your picks. And a lot of prospects, unless they are completely, like it's written in stone that they are going to be great. You know, you look at your Adley Rutschmans and stuff who themselves are usually untouchables. It's hard to say for baseball, you know, you just have to, as a front office, you gotta, you know, look for what you want. You can't really go out looking for specific positions, I feel like, especially in the prospect conversation, because that's just setting yourself up for failure. But they absolutely need to get several top of the, or like, you know, high-end prospects, whatever that looks like, whether it's position players, whether it's pitchers. I feel like they just need to get something, because right now the Blue Jays prospect pool is bottom five in the league, and that is a fairly widely accepted fact, is that this team does not have a good future if they cannot add by getting rid of Guerrero, or, you know, by extending these guys and hoping that something changes.
Great answer. As always, as we say farewell to Jackson. Jackson, thank you for hopping on the call here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a joy to be on Golden Bold.
The best radio show on campus universities. I'm going to hang up so he can't respond to that. Of course, he has his own show on CKLU 96.7. That's Tuesdays at 5. We're on Golden Bold at 1 to 2 o'clock. It's approaching 2 o'clock, so we'll wrap it up real quick. Of course, over this past episode, we discussed Four Nations, we discussed MLB, and we discussed the Loree women's hockey team in playoff action tonight at Rim Park here at home in the second game of a best of three against the Waterloo Rivals. The Battle of Waterloo tonight at Rim Park, the second game of a best of three series. Waterloo won the first one. Who will win tonight? Catch it in person. Tickets are going like pancakes, like hotcakes. And make sure you get your tickets. If you can't make it out, make sure you tune in here on RadioLoree.com or for the visual stream on OUA TV. Also, stay tuned at 2 o'clock here, just a couple minutes, while Film Score Fridays, which is also another great show. My name's Ian Bailey. Thanks for tuning in to Golden Bold. We'll see you next week, the usual time, Fridays at 1. Have a great weekend, everyone.